The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning. Need to get on top of the day's sports news? Well, the OTB Brief is the only sports update you'll need every morning. With all the breaking stories, post-match reaction.
They had one more day to rest. We were really in trouble. Really in trouble to build the team.
And the best bits from off the ball, all in a 10-minute podcast.
Oh, sweaty palms. Of course, you guys know what it's like, but... That was nervy.
The OTB Brief, online every morning from 7 a.m. on offtheball.com, the Go Loud app, and everywhere you get your podcasts. The OTB Podcast Network.
Hello there, you're very welcome along. It's Monday's Off the Ball. The GAA seems to be heading for a club versus county showdown. Michael Deignan, he is now chairman of the Offaly County Board, of course, will take a call this hour. All questions, thoughts for him, 53106. Monday Night Rugby will include Rory O'Connor with us just after 8 o'clock. We will also be talking Jack McCaffrey. We're not quite sure if he's on a break for 2020 or if he's stepping back indefinitely. Conor McKeown of the Independent Sports Desk will talk to us around 8:30, give us the latest on McCaffrey's decision to step away there. And on the football show, Pat Nevin with us. FA Cup semi-finals looking quite good. Looking quite good. FA Cup in June, soon to be July, going rather well. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. We have with us Richie McCormick. Hello.
How are you, Joe? You well?
I'm very well. Had a week off, Richie. Missed you lots, but it was nice to get the break. Adrian Barry, hello to you.
Joseph, Richie, good evening.
Text in right from the off from Brian here. Given Catherine Martin's ever-expanding brief, does that mean Off the Ball is no longer just limited to sport? I can't wait to hear Nathan Murphy's culture and tourism podcast, or indeed Adrian Barry opining on the Gaeltacht and the arts. Well, indeed. She's going to be a busy woman, Adrian Barry.
It's weird, isn't it? I suppose the first thing to say. That many briefs is just a bit weird. But having said that, there will be somebody who will be specifically looking after sport, as there always is, a junior super duper minister, whatever they call them, who'll have that brief. And for the right person, you assume that there's an opportunity to be an effective voice at that level. It's not going to replicate having a sport in a department of its own. It does feel like all the stuff that was left at the bottom of the box, they just sort of jumbled together and went, sure, listen, you have it, there you go. But at the same time, I'm not fully on. There's been a lot of stuff, particularly online last night, with people saying, that it's sort of a dead duck before it even gets going. I don't fully ascribe to that, I have to say.
It's almost as if they said, well, there's a leadership contest. Let's throw a few extra things our way just to keep that at bay. That was the more cynical interpretation as well, I saw. What do we make of Phil Mickelson's midlife crisis, wonders Tony? I'm enjoying it. Did we see this over the weekend? Did you see Phil and his outfits? Oh.
No.
Have a little look afterwards.
Worse than the shirt?
He's got blue steel kind of glasses. He's got Top Gun glasses, reflective ones. And he's got suit pants still, but at the bottom, they're tapered in, sort of like joggers. It's a strong look, I would say. Phil just turned 50, by the way. He's also trademarked the phrase, hit bombs, over the weekend that emerged. So you'll be able to buy T-shirts that say hit bombs soon. That is his catchphrase.
Let's call it a spade here. It's not as if Phil Mickelson has been the cutting edge of fashion for his entire life. You know what I mean? This is not like he suddenly turned the corner when he became 50.
Who says golf isn't cool? So, gents, the weekend that was, anything catching your eye? Simon, all this talk of United challenging for the title next year, please, abysmal performance by their second string on Saturday. Yeah, we've had a few texts in on Manchester United performance. I thought the FA Cup had a rather good weekend. It's been a while since I've sat down and enjoyed the FA Cup quarterfinals. Richie, did anything catch your eye?
The United performance did catch my eye from the point of view that for the duration of extra time, pretty much until Harry Maguire scored that late goal, they were essentially playing against the reputation of an opposition goalkeeper, which I thought was a fascinating watch because they knew and were playing very much like they knew that Tim Krul was going to single-handedly beat them at penalties. Mm. And it was really odd. They almost had the Louis van Gaal at Lansdowne Road in 2001 approach, which was, if we throw on every single striker we have, this is all going to be okay and we'll eventually score. And wouldn't you know it, the centre half popped up with a goal late on. So it was a really odd performance, and I guess it showed how far along the road United still have to go before they travel, because there's still a lot of dead wood knocking around that squad.
It was the closest, Adrian, I've seen to a game of backs v forwards in a long time.
And interesting, the chatter about, if we press pause now, right, like now is as close a prediction as we possibly are going to get. The comings and goings of players, which I'm sure there'll be many over the coming months, notwithstanding, the closest we're going to get to be able to predict what's going to happen next season, because you have to assume that teams start to tinker now, particularly up at, not at the United end, because there's still so much to play for in Spurs, but like particularly from a City and Liverpool point of view, there isn't any point in making a great prognosis after this in terms of where those teams go, and obviously the various players notwithstanding. But I mean, look, everybody's hanging out, Joe. Every other day, there's some utterance from Roy Keane to tell us exactly how we should be feeling about things, and until I get that, I'm not fully sated.
Oh yeah, did we delve into part two yesterday?
I do you know what I did? I actually didn't bother reading part one at all last week, and just read the two of them together yesterday. I'm not sure I could have sort of I like, everybody's fascinated by Roy Keane. Totally get it, totally understand it. I don't think there's any great mystery as to why we're fascinated by the guy. Like, he's one of the greatest Irish sporting icons of all time, given what he achieved. And he's a guy with an opinion who's not afraid to express it. Like, frequently, when you read, the whole thing was a bit bizarre. Anyway, the entire thing was just all a bit bizarre. Like, you wonder why the hell he was doing the interview at all when you read the quotes. Why was he doing it?
I don't know, actually. That was never clear.
The thing about Keane, like, that I don't get, like, sure, he is one of our greatest players of all time, and that's, you know, essentially the root of why he's fascinating. But also, Liam Brady is one of our best players of all time. Not everything he says is fascinating. Paul McGrath is one of our best players of all time. Not everything he says people find fascinating. I don't know why people make that leap to Keane. Is it just because he's that angry most of the time that people think, oh, this is going to be good, Roy's going to... Joey reminds me of, did you ever see the episode of The Simpsons where Marge gets involved with the PETA people, and then there's a fight between the Yakuza and other people on the front lawn? There's that guy in the white suit who Homer looks out the window and goes, but Marge, that guy in the white suit, he hasn't done anything yet, but you know, when he does something, it's going to be cool. That's essentially the role that Roy Keane's playing now. People just wait for him to say something, and then he does, and people go, and are shocked that he does say something when he has been, you know, lining it up all along, pretty much like one of his tackles.
I think he puts himself out there as a truth teller, doesn't he? Like, reading that thing yesterday, it's like, I'm a truth teller, and there are a large section of the country who buy into that and hang on his every word, and a large section of the country who don't. Like, the more I actually read about it and all that, I suppose, look, you go back to the Saipan stuff and you're on one side or the other, the more it goes on, the more I'm like, I don't even tell us about either of them. And I also thought that his comments about Keith Andrews particularly were so needlessly nasty. Like, why do you feel the need to say that about somebody?
It was a weird moment as well, where he wasn't even asked about it, and he said, actually, just a point I would like to make. I've come across some bluffers in my time. It was almost like, was this the whole point of the interview? What I just find is, like, I think Barry Egan's got a slightly rough deal. He's been roundly criticised, and maybe the Andrews thing.
Well, Joe, can I say on that point?
Yeah.
Roy Keane says to him, oh, don't talk to me about bullshitters. Keith Andrews, the biggest bullshitter I've seen in the game in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened in the interview, but on paper, he went on to, okay, and so, God, what about Pogba, or whatever it was? Like, hang on.
No,
hang
that,
on a second.
That should have been picked up that moment, sure. And who knows, maybe it was. Who knows, maybe it was, and then the answer is worse again, and that doesn't make it in. Who knows what happens in these things? Do you know what I mean? But
I think if there was any sort of a rebuttal, which there should have been, it was nasty and it was needless.
Yeah.
That should have been included, would be my view.
I agree with you on that. That point aside, I mean, nobody's perfect for sure. And I mean, we could have picked Roy up more on the Johnny Walters thing a couple of months ago, whenever it was. So, you know, I'm glass houses and all that. But what strikes me as very interesting is anytime Barry Egan asked a question that I was suddenly mentally sitting up in my seat for and saying, ooh, interested, Roy Keane seemed to shut that down immediately. Sorry, I don't know why we're talking about this. I didn't want to get into this, but anyway. Like, for instance, when he said he's reading the book on 1916 and Barry Egan said, what do you make of Sinn Féin's rise recently in Ireland? I sat up and I thought, ooh, interested. And Keane straight away said, ah, here, I'm just reading a book on Sinn Féin. Go away with that. I'm not answering that. Or when he asked him about Saudi Arabia taking over Newcastle, you know, I thought, ooh, interested to see. And he said, I've no opinion on that.
That was a tough cop.
Picking low-hanging fruit.
Absolute cop out.
Or just picking low-hanging fruit.
Or even, and I get, look, he may not be equipped. He may not have studied up the Saudi Arabian human rights, for instance, record of late, or he may not feel equipped to talk about Sinn Féin's rise. I get that. But it extended right through the piece. Like when he was asked, you know, have you, because he was talking about how he goes to comedy shows and doesn't get the belly laugh situation. And then I think Egan said, well, when have you cried recently? And again, I sat up and I thought, ooh, I'm interested. And he said, yeah, I cry at stuff at TV. And Egan rightly followed up and said, Barry Egan followed up and said, what kind of stuff makes you cry? And I think, you know, the specifics of that could have been quite revealing. And it was pretty funny. Roy was like, what do you mean what makes me cry? Sad stuff. Sad stuff makes me cry. Would you go on? And, you know, but shuts it down.
Stop asking me stupid questions, he said to him.
Yeah. And it wasn't a stupid question. It could have been a very revealing answer. But any of that more interesting stuff just gets... The gate comes up, do not enter. That's what tends to happen.
The belly laugh. I don't understand why people belly laugh at stuff. Like, what planet are you on? Like, you're begrudging other people from having a belly laugh. Will you come off it? Was he serious with that?
And he didn't name check you, but he did talk about you yesterday about the journalists wearing the same clothes for 25 years. Hey.
Yeah.
Hey. There we go. So, there is one other text before we get into the news rant. Can someone save Bernie Eccleston from himself? Says Graham. This has been quite something. JP outside. this is something. I don't know. Maybe you remembered this. This is around the time when he's defending Max Mosley. So we're on.
Okay.
Thin ice here. I'm looking at you, yeah, Richie.
Careful,
you can just stay quiet. For the next two minutes. You're not commenting. So this is an interview in 2009 in The Guardian.
Yeah.
And I know cancel culture wasn't what it is now. In a lot of ways, and then even Bernie says, terrible to say this, I suppose.
Good start.
In a lot of ways, terrible to say this, I suppose. But apart from the fact that Hitler got taken away and persuaded to do things I have no idea whether he wanted to do or not, he was in the way that he could command a lot of people able to get things done.
What?
Yes. Hitler able to get things done. And then he went on to say, I prefer strong leaders. Margaret Thatcher made decisions and got the job done. Politicians too worried about elections. We did a terrible thing when we supported the idea of getting rid of Saddam Hussein. He was the only one who could control the country. It was the same with the Taliban. End quotes. What the hell? This is an 09. This is an 09. So.
Are these on tape?
Just
make a montage out of this.
What?
Yeah, so anyway. There we are. By the way, Mount Rushmore, Claire, today was the choice we had. Well, we'll play you some of Keith Wood later on. He wasn't picking, but he was contributing, and he picked his four. And the ultimate four include Gerlach Nan's there, Ciarán Fallon is there. I'm not going to name the other two. You can check it out on the OTB Sports app. If you haven't downloaded it yet, get on it. It's our brand new app. Houses all our content, videos, news, live score updates, and podcasts, obviously. So just in your app store, search OTB Sports and you will find it there, and you'll get Mount Rushmore from this morning. Claire actually was quite strong in the end. So we'll play some more Keith Wood had to say later on. He didn't pick Gerlach Nan. I just thought you would have had to pick Gerlach Nan on your first name on
the list.
Yeah, he also didn't pick Keith Wood. You know, I would have thought
that's fair enough.
That is probably fair enough. So, Michael Dignan coming up this hour. Let us know if you're a club player, how you're feeling about the general situation. The problem is, I guess, in 32 different counties, there might be 32 different solutions. Michael, obviously based in Offaly, we'll talk to him. I know he's meeting actually John Mahon this evening and Michael Fenley this evening, the two inter-county managers, to discuss how they're going to do things. So we'll talk to Michael Dignan in about 20 minutes or so. Richie, you're starting with the Daniel Kinahan news.
The president of MTK Global, Bob Yalen, claims that Kinahan is to step away from boxing. Yalen has told The Athletic that Kinahan is doing what's right for the sport. Kinahan has no criminal convictions but was previously named in the High Court as a senior figure in organised crime. Yalen says Kinahan will step away from boxing to focus on other interests.
Adrian, there's a general suspicion over this. I mean, stepping back from the limelight, certainly. Beyond that, we're not so sure.
I think we can be sure of something, that he's definitely going to be involved in some way, shape or form. I saw the quotes of Billy Joss Saunders today from following that, where he's saying that if Daniel Kinahan is forced to walk away from the sport, that he too, at the age of 30, I think is all that Billy Joss Saunders is, that he too is going to walk away. I don't know if people follow that or in any way interested in it, but... reading the quotes, there's absolutely no way that he's following through on this. It was like, you know, if Daniel is not allowed to negotiate my contract, well, I'll try and get him to negotiate it before he leaves, or maybe I'll just get somebody else. like really the words of a child, and also the words of somebody who, boxing for all its ails, is far better off without somebody who's got an awful track record when it comes to various elements of morality and human rights. I think that there won't be, I mean, we talk about Daniel Kennan, but there won't be too many tears shed for Billy Joe Saunders walking away from the sport either.
Premier League tonight, Richie?
Yeah, and Burnley boss Sean Dyche is at, away to Crystal Palace this evening. It's been claimed that Dyche's relationship with the Burnley board has broken down over recruitment. Jeff Hendrick was among a number of Burnley players not offered new deals last week, leaving Dyche short on numbers for the run-in. But the Clarets boss says his relationship with the board is stretched but not broken.
Well, I think it's important to remember that I've been doing this 7.5 years. It's like people think there hasn't been challenges there. I can assure you every year is a challenge. I say it all the time. I try and be open and honest, and you've known me a long time. I try and call it how it is. That's all it was. I called it how it is. And as I said last night, you know, people suggested that it was the first time in 7.5 years. Well, if I was a board member or a chairman, I'd be pretty happy with that if my manager was only asking me questions once every 7.5 years. But there's lots of challenges here. And sometimes you've got to remember, I've got a group of players asking questions as well. So sometimes they have to see the manager, you know, make a statement and stand up, you know, because they've got to know that you're with them as well. But the main thing for me is to have a bond, and it's through the club. And sometimes that gets stretched. It's simple as that. And on this occasion, it's been stretched. It's simple.
Right.
News in for that one, Joe. James McCarthy on the bench for Palace tonight, and Jimmy Dunn, the Republic of Ireland under-21 international, also among the subs for the visitors, Burnley.
That was refreshingly honest. Usually the textbook play there is to say there's no problem.
Yeah, looking at it, I was having a look at their squad earlier on, especially in light of the four players that were allowed leave last week, three, and Phil Bardsley signed an extension. For Burnley to be in an 11th position in the Premier League with a starting 11 tonight that has the likes of, and this isn't a knock on them, it's just in comparison to those around them or possibly below as well, like Ashley Westwood, Jack Hork, Josh Brownhill, Dwight McNeil, and Matai Vidra up front on his own, like, they're doing immense work, and Dyche has done immense work just to keep them between the ditches. Not only that, to have them in mid-table security. So I think he's right to have a little bit of a knock towards the chairman and the chief executive there to go, listen, what's going on here? You're after leaving me very, very short on numbers. I've got a bunch of kids on the bench. I haven't been able to field full substitutes bench in most cases since they returned. But I think it's fixable. And from a Burnley point of view, they should damn well make sure it's fixable, because hearing names like Mark Hughes associated with the job, if I was a Burnley fan, I'd be very worried.
Yeah, fair point. Fergus says, I saw Leo got in first for his haircut today. The rich get richer. I presume that's for Adker, he means, and not Cullen. I didn't see pictures of Cullen getting his haircut. I did see Leo. Did you see Harry Maguire's tweet after the game at the weekend? He said, nothing like a last-minute winner. How about going out and dominating the worst team in the league, says James, a Manchester United fan. Lads, please stop drivelling on about this Liverpool team. I don't think we haven't mentioned Liverpool this evening, but
stop! Listen, I don't know if you've had like the with the commentary. There was one great tweet from Nathan Murphy's commentary of City Palace. Chelsea. That's how low I rate Chelsea at the minute. At the weekend, saying that Nathan was, what's an alternate word for this, enjoying himself about Manchester City. Fulsomely during the game, like you get all of that, like at Liverpool's expense, by the way. Sorry, was the key to all of this from a hardened Liverpool fan, which is remarkable given anybody who's I'm not outing the man here. He's been on record himself speaking about the fact that he's a Liverpool fan. So you get everything, you get all sorts, like you know.
You do.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Joe's what I'm saying.
Well, the person went on to say, drivelling on about Liverpool and how they're the greatest team of all time, they're not even close. They joined the one league club with Blackburn and Leicester, says Brian in court.
Oh, Jesus.
This is trolling.
That's just silly.
So, League Two final, Richie.
Yeah. Behind closed doors tonight at Wembley, a place in League One on offer for either Exeter City or Northampton Town. It could be a nice way for Northampton to mark their former player, Theo Foley, who passed away last week. Some Irish involvement in this as well. Pierce Sweeney, the former Bray defender, starts for Exeter. And for Northampton, Michael Harriman starts up front. And a very, very distant cousin of mine, Alan McCormack, starts in defence for them as well. Kickoff is in 9 minutes' time behind closed doors at Wembley.
How distant?
Very. Very. My dad explained it to me when he was alive.
Like you could marry. You could marry.
If I wanted to marry Alan McCormack, I'm pretty much sure I could do. Yeah. His family might have something to say about it, and mine. But you know,
good to have the options there. You know,
that's distant enough.
We could be reaching end times. You know, it's nice to have options up.
So James Lowe, then, I guess we're going to be talking about this. The think pieces are incoming in November when he lines out for Ireland. So that seems nailed on now.
It does, yeah, because James Lowe could be an Ireland regular by the time his new contract expires. The Kiwi winger has signed a new deal to stay with Leinster until the summer of 2023. The 27-year-old joined the province from the Chiefs 3 years ago, and he'll become eligible to play for Ireland in November. It's something he's spoken about in the past, saying he would be, in fact, open to it.
I think it's also something, in fairness to him, because he's a pretty honest fella, that he admitted that the residency rule, as it was when he signed 3 years, was just a bit daft. But hey, it's the rule, you know? And come November, when he lines out for Ireland, and i.e. a Stockdale or a Keith Earls or maybe even an Andrew Conway isn't getting their game, Adrian, there will be pieces. Lots of people won't think it's right and it shouldn't happen. And I think there'll be a week or two of storm in a teacup, and then the grumbles will subside and he'll just play for Ireland, and that's the way it'll go.
Yeah, I don't know if it's COVID stuff, but I'm sort of at the point where you're nearly a bit fatigued by that whole conversation, right? Like, I think that I'm nearly now at the point that, listen, just get him into an Ireland charter. If they're the rules and there they stand at the minute, whether he signs a 3-year deal or not, it's almost irrelevant. And like, we've been down this road before. It's actually in some ways a relief to see him sign a new deal, because we've been down this road before with other players who've been brought in under that kind of project thing, Ben Tao being one of them, who obviously bolted off before we could get them into an Ireland shirt. And, you know, it's not, I suppose what happens now, he's probably here for life, isn't he? Like, I know we've had like conversations before with Bundy Aki, where his contract is up at Connacht, and he was talking about leaving, and look at her, his entire right to do whatever the hell he wants with the rest of his career, Ireland capped or not. CJ Standard the same, but it would seem like, I think it'd be highly unusual that he'd sign up for 3 years, become an Ireland cap, as Richie says, on current form, probably goes on to become a regular. Like, that's probably him for life now.
Well, it takes him up to the next World Cup, certainly. And he is the last of the 3-year residency rule signings. So anybody, I think, pretty much after him has to be here for 5 years. So he got in just before they changed the rule. Richie, we're going to Travellers Championship from last night.
Yeah. Rory McIlroy says he'll use the next fortnight to rectify what he's called some dumb mistakes in his game. The world number one shot a final round 67 yesterday to finish tied for 11th at the Travellers Championship. It was McIlroy's best placing since the PGA Tour's resumption. Dustin Johnson was a one-shot winner over Kevin Streelman last night. However, McIlroy says he's made too many mistakes over the past couple of weeks, and his decision-making this weekend specifically was poor. McIlroy will skip the Rocket Mortgage Classic and the John Deere Classic before returning at the Workday Charity Open in Dublin, Ohio.
A text in, Malloy, you're such a lefty liberal. Who wrote this? Yep. Ivan Yates? Malloy, you're such a lefty liberal, but your sport, golf, is to a man Republican! 3 exclamation marks. Nothing else. I don't know what I'm supposed to say to that. Oh,
well, you are a lefty liberal.
I don't even know how lefty I am. okay, so yeah, it's true. I mean, the point is true about the golf. They do like Trump on the tour. The golf last night was pretty good in that Brendan Todd was the two-shot leader, and beside him was Dustin Johnson. And these are always interesting events to watch when it's someone like Todd. He has won twice before on tour, but he's not used to this kind of heat. He's not used to that kind of field chasing him. And invariably, and it's kind of cruel, but they crack. You know, I'd say 8 times out of 10, that person who's not used to sleeping on the lead with a brilliant field behind them and has a 2 or 3 shot lead, they crack. And so I sat down to watch it, because it's kind of cool as well if they put the accelerator down and pull away. But man, this guy cracked. And in horrible fashion too. It was on the 12th hole. He was there in 2, par 4, and there was no water, there was no anything. He just shanked the ball, mischipped the ball, it rolled back to his feet a few times, walked off with a triple bogey 7 out of the tournament. And just the pressure of golf and all that thinking time, it gets you in the end. It just gets you in the end. And Dustin Johnson,
most people,
gets him at win number 21. Sorry, yeah.
Most people, Joe, not lefty liberals like yourself, but most people watch golf for two reasons. It's to witness the Tiger Woods type performances, uh-huh, and also Thomas Bjorn, what was his name, Jack, the French guy out of the water.
Our friend at
John
the
Vandeveld.
Open.
John Vandeveld.
Vandeveld, yeah.
The crumble.
They're the two reasons that most Joe Sups watch golf. So good to see everybody got bang for their buck last night.
Yeah, there was plenty of bang for the buck. Lads, is there an argument to be made that Jack McCaffrey is the best footballer of the last 10 years, if not more? Oh, he's only 26. Look what he's achieved, says Mick. Oh, there's an argument. I mean, I would have him pretty much. Who's the best footballer in the country now? I'd lean towards McCaffrey, to be honest.
Yeah, Fenton.
Fenton. Yeah, okay. He's in the top three, four. Put it that way. You know, you could. Fenton. Yeah. Fenton's pretty special.
Like there's another layer there of player like Conn, Clifford, who have the potential for it. But I think if you froze it, yeah, between the two of them, maybe.
Yeah. So we don't. We'll talk to Conor McKeown, who's very clued into the Dublin scene, around 8:30 or so, and get a feel. I mean, because yesterday in the Sunday paper review, some of the papers were saying McCaffrey was stepping back very much due to his workload and his work commitments, and then other pieces were specifically saying, well, he's not stepping back due to that, it's more he wants to put more into his club, or he just wants a bit of a break for things. And then there was also some differing reports on whether or not this is just a 2020 thing or if this is a more permanent thing. So we haven't heard from the man himself at any stage, and we'll see what Conor McKeown's been hearing. But either way, makes things a touch more difficult for Dublin. Like last year, when he scores 1-3 in the All-Ireland final against Kerry, without Jack McCaffrey on that given day, Adrian, they don't win five in a row.
Ah, oh, listen, what an incredible input. Like, you're talking, we're having a discussion about whether he's the best footballer in the country. The blow that this is for Desi Farrell is incredible. Like, you spare a thought for that man. He's probably at the minute going through the, head in the hands, this is an absolute disaster, before he gets a microphone in front of him and says, listen, we plan with who we have, and you're going to hear that 100 times. But, like, he is stepping away for 2020. You'd be absolutely certain. By the way, could you admire the guy anymore? Like, he's stepping away from a juggernaut of success. This cannot be an easy decision. You could see him again in 2020, will be certainly in my thinking at the minute. I think we'll definitely see him again in a Dublin jersey in the coming years. Yeah, like what I'm saying is, if Dublin get to an All-Ireland final later in the year, maybe he's tipping away with the club, he's in good frame of mind, might be semi-final stage, you're having him back in, there's no question.
Well, if Dermot Connolly can come back in, I mean, McCaffrey certainly can. You know, if it's just for the final month, these are extraordinary circumstances. But I guess we don't fully know his reasons for leaving, so that may be part of the story. Rich, where are you going next?
Dylan Fratelli became the latest player to withdraw from the PGA Tour after receiving a positive result yesterday for coronavirus. Fratelli says he's not had any symptoms, but he'll now have to self-isolate for a fortnight and will miss next week's Rock Mortgage Classic in Detroit. Last week, Cameron Champ and Denny McCarthy both withdrew from the Travelers following positive results. Graeme McDowell and Brooks Koepka did not participate after their respective caddies returned positive tests as well. Some big transfer news on the continent. Barcelona have confirmed that Brazilian midfielder Arthur is joining Juventus. A fee has been agreed of €72 million with an additional €10 million in potential add-ons. Arthur only joined Barca from Gremio in 2018. Miralem Pjanic has moved in the opposite direction for a deal worth an initial €60 million.
Very good. Gents, that's us done for this evening. Richie McCormick, Adrian Barry, thanks to you both.
Cheers.
Thanks, lads.
Cheers. Up next, Michael Deignan, chairman of the Offaly County Board, will talk to us about the club versus county situation, which is definitely coming to an head soon.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.